The Unpublished Podcast with Amy and James.
Hi, creatives. Today we are going to be talking about my gripe with the 9-to-5 guy.
And for those of you who don't know what Amy's talking about, there's this very, very popular Instagram/TikTok account going around at the moment. I think it's called Normalize the 9-to-5.
Normalize the 9-to-5.
And first of all, I just want to start the discussion and saying, if you have a 9-to-5 job, I can fully respect you. There's absolutely nothing wrong with having a 9-to-5 job.
There's nothing wrong with...
And that's the whole reason that we hate the account. Because everyone knows there's nothing wrong with the 9-to-5 account. And this Instagram/TikTok does reel after reel about how, you know, Instagram, you don't have to start to be an entrepreneur. You know, it's okay just to go to your job and just to make some money and come home and have a quiet life. And like, yeah,
we know. So yeah, I do obviously want to say and be like the starting point to a bigger conversation. But obviously, like, I've had 9-to-5 jobs. A lot of artists really thrive with having 9-to-5 jobs, which, you know, they don't invest their whole lives in. And then they have, you know, excess energy. Some of us, I know a lot of us don't, but they have excess energy to do that art. So if you have a 9-to-5 job, like, again, like, this is not shitting on 9-to-5 jobs. It's shitting on HUD.
Hubs. Yeah.
I thought his name is HUD.
No, his name is Hubs.
Well, that's even worse.
A HUD is like a heads-up display in a science fiction
game. And also, obviously, we're not actually attacking Hubs as a person. I just want to talk about the phenomenon and the craze that has happened around this normalize the 9-to-5 situation. Mm-hmm. And I just want to acknowledge, first of all, that there is nothing I find more triggering. And I come at this incredibly emotionally, not from a removed point of view, with a lot of probably unprocessed anger that I'm intending to process with the collective on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's obviously still a lot to unpack for you, despite years and years and years of trying to deprogram.
I think for me, he's been like below, keep being fed his content. And again, it's just him, first of all, and everyone does take the piss a bit in his comment section, looking miserable.
He could just have resting miserable face, which, to be fair, we all have sometimes.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
He doesn't look super stoked going about his 9-to-5 life and saying that, you know, we're just inundated with all this ideas that we could be doing more, but we don't need more. And I understand that Instagram is a space where you see a lot of people taking up space in different ways. Like, it is inherently an artist platform. It is there for people who are doing things differently. And that's why I love it. And so to watch him be like, no, it's okay. Like, I do understand where he's coming from, because these platforms can feel like everybody started their own business or everybody's being an artist. But for me, it was so deeply triggering, because I feel like all my life, all I've ever tried to do is rebel against the absolutely oppressive expectation that I would have a 9-to-5 job. And I have felt and have been made to feel like I am so inadequate and so lazy and so immature, because I couldn't thrive in that space. I couldn't thrive in the 9-to-5 space, and I didn't want to be there.
I agree. You know, if you just go outside of Instagram, like, if you don't spend 12 hours a day on Instagram, which I think most of us don't, anything else is ever telling you is that, say, what Amy and I do is bullshit. Kind of the only message is that, you're a writer. Oh, you work on Instagram? Like, that's not a legitimate thing to do. So all the people in authority, all of our parents, all of our peers, not our peers, our friends, that's all we hear constantly. Sorry, friends, I know that you're all very supportive, if anyone of you listening. Yeah. And of course, parents are quite supportive, but at the same time, there's still this little, like, asks us, you know, they don't, like, it's so beyond their comprehension. It's so outside of the norm that, and you just feel this pervasive energy constantly that what you're doing is weird.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, if you go on Instagram and you have a certain Instagram algorithm attached to you, away, if that's what Hubs is getting served on Instagram, it's because he's watching those videos. You know, it's not like that's all of Instagram. It's not like all of Instagram is going, you must have a business, you must quit your job, you must quit the 9-to-5. 9-to-5 is bad. Small sliver of Instagram doing that. Mm. And I'm so sorry, Hubs, but the algorithm
is
because of, for a reason, probably. Every bit of popular culture, every news article, every politician, every boss is saying the 9-to-5 is the way.
Yeah. It's industrialization. Like, this is how we're supposed to work in the system that we're in.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry, Hubs, if you see a few videos on Instagram which are like, hey, maybe you'd five, and he's like, whoa, back in the 9 to 5. It's like, great. Like,
that's
no
so good.
I'm so
you
sorry.
You don't need to make content about this.
Why do you then have to go and tell everyone else that they should also... I know this is hypocritical of us, because I feel like we often talk about quitting a job and becoming an artist. Although we never say that.
No,
to be clear.
You have to do what it serves you.
Of course. And I think we would never be black and white about it and go, you have to, you know, the only way to have a meaningful life is to completely quit your job and all you do is art all the time. Like, that's not what we ever say.
No, it's just that I have a huge heart for those who do want to quit their jobs to pursue creativity, because that's what I wanted to do. And I never, ever saw anyone say it was possible.
Yeah.
No one ever told me, not even the full-time artists told me. So I do have this huge heart, and I want to tell creatives, if you want to quit your job and pursue art, like, this is a possible thing to do. Let's talk about how you could do it. And being him be so prolific, there's so much irony in it as well.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Like,
and then he starts to get sponsorship deals,
it's
and
so
you're like
funny.
He's like, no, just have a 9 to 5, be content. And then he's got a million followers on Instagram, and what do you know, every video has like 4 sponsors in it, and I'm sure he is making a fucking
but
mint,
he has to keep his
but he
job.
Has to keep his job, and like, he's probably making obviously he's probably making job. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, by being a creator on social media, doing exactly what he railed against, and he has to stay at his job.
Why do you think his videos have become so popular?
Because I think first of all, people hate influencers.
Hate influencers. And I'd actually love to have a conversation about that as well. Like, people fucking hate influencers.
And I think, you know, people maybe are sick of seeing influencers
thrive
or something. Or
there's so many different ways to take this conversation. I would love to put a pin in the people hate influencers thing. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring it to a video that I saw this morning, which was comparing the glorification of the 9 to 5 to the glorification of the homesteading wife.
Mm.
So there's this huge, big phenomenon on TikTok and Instagram of like the homesteader wife, who's she's doing traditional feminine values. And it's all about how it's never be a real woman these days. And it's very about like coming back home to like and just raising kids. And again, I feel like they're coming at the same thing. It's like, we don't have to be a CEO. We've been told we've had to be CEOs, and I don't want to be a CEO. I just want to be a mom.
And
it's
why,
like,
is society making me be a CEO? It's like, no one's no one's making you be a CEO. Like, it's still incredibly difficult to be a CEO. Like, most of society still is trying to, the patriarchy has an immune, it's almost like they are an immune response.
Yeah.
Just as Hubs is an immune response from capitalism, right?
Yeah.
Like, Hubs is a immune response from capitalism going, this whole, you know, quitting your 9 to 5 and starting a business on Instagram thing or whatever, on an internet thing, it's getting out of hand. Like, so what if workers start to take power back for themselves? Like, what if people start to leave their office jobs? Like, we can't have this.
Yeah.
It's like the immune response against working from home. You know, everyone was happy working from home, and suddenly all these bosses are like, whoa. It's almost this internal narrative keeps, as soon as patriarchy loses a tiny bit of power, they're like, oh my god, things have gone crazy. Whoa. What you mean I can't just slap a chick's ass anymore? Whoa. This is insane. It cut off when I started talking about slapping people's asses. It just couldn't.
It couldn't handle
it. So we're coming
it.
Back in after a 2-minute break of us regathering ourselves, trying to remember what we were talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, I think you're right. It's this like bizarre response of counterculture, and it's like counterculture, and it's coming, you know, it comes in with these waves. And yeah, for me, it enraged me. I think, again, just because I've tried so hard, and I felt so stupid for not doing what everyone expected of me, for not having a 9 to 5 job, and then to see this guy gather so many people in support of him, I was really triggered. Like, I really thought that I think actually, like, Hubs's account and is an example of like the tide is turning. People are realizing they don't have to do what we've been told we have to do. We can work in other ways.
There was a great quote on a guest on the Diary of a CEO podcast, and this person was an Australian guy, and he was like, baby boom, basically the cheapest housing in human history, and that was their big benefit, and millennials have access to the cheapest way to start a small business of anyone in history, and that's our great strength.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's so, the barriers for entry are so low now to start a small business. You don't have to buy a shopfront. Don't have to buy inventory. you just share ideas online and you can build businesses that way. I know it's much more complicated than that in so many ways, but it's still the upfront cost of you just having a go is so much lower.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and again, I guess I see some of this like Hubs' content is like trying to take that away from us.
Yes.
Like, we have this really cool thing. Let us have it. And let us be proud of it. And again, we don't all need to be entrepreneurs. Like, that's not what we're saying. But, like, I just don't know that that needs to be said.
No, of course not. And I almost think it's almost a cynical, bad faith interpretation from Hubs, because he knows this, you know. He would know deep down that he goes to his office and everyone else in his office is fine with it. I'm assuming most of his friends are probably working 9 to 5. He's basically just latched onto something that I'm sure knows to be false. Like, you have to know. There's no way you can live in this society and not realize that the dominant way that people want you to live is you go and work for someone else, you contribute your labor to them, they benefit from it, and then you go home and, I don't know.
Chill.
That's the dominant way that we've lived for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
There's no way you can't know that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I want to come back to this everybody hates influencers things. I asked on Threads, why do you think everybody hates influencers? And there was an interesting response. A lot of people really fucking did hate them in the comment section. They were like, they're the fumerism and capitalism. They thought that they get paid too much. I mean, bizarre stories and narratives we have around influencers and influencer culture.
And I think it's silly because, and to quote another podcast I listened to, Cal Newport on Tim Ferriss, rather to paraphrase it. And, you know, Cal Newport, he's the kind of anti-social media guy, or one of the, I said he did a thing where, actually maybe it was a mix between his own podcast and Tim, I listened to them back to back. And in one of these, he went through Instagram and he was like, oh, I'm going to just, his producer brought up Instagram and he was like, oh, look at these things. It's just like someone on holidays, someone in a bikini, someone selling a product. I'm like, that's not, like, that. Sure, that is a side of Instagram, but that is, I think people have a really narrow view of what an influencer does. Like, you people would call you an influencer.
Yeah, I have been.
We haven't made any money from selling products on Instagram ever.
No,
not once. And so we are bloggers.
Yeah.
Lumped, like, all these myriad ways of creating on Instagram gets lumped in as influencer, as some kind of like stereotypical, vapid,
attention-seeking
person who's just there to, you know, sell various kinds of on Instagram. And once again, I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that.
There's a demand for them, obviously.
Yeah.
But what you do is not like that.
I know.
You're a blogger. You sell ideas. You're really working as a writer, just in a new format.
Yeah. I think that we have a lot of like false narratives around what it means to be an entrepreneur online and what it means to take up space on social media. Like, it's like the world's still trying to figure it out. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what it is to like put yourself out creative online. Like, when I see an influencer, like a true make money by showing brands, like, I see them as an artist. And I know that's super controversial, but they're making content. They're having to be creative. Like, I think there's super creative people, and I don't understand why there's a demonization of them,
because I think it's perceived as being easy as well.
Yes. And I don't vehemently disagree.
I think people think, oh, you know, all I had to do was, you know, if I just put a bikini on and walked around, and I'd instantly have a million followers, and it's like, not really.
I think it's very anti-woman a lot of the time as well. I think it's sexist.
Yeah,
people don't like seeing these women take up space in those ways.
And, you know, if they were models in a traditional magazine like Vogue,
no one thinks of shitting on them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess people have always, there's always been a slight anti-model, but certainly people, there's not the vitriol towards models as there are towards influencers.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah, and I know it's like, it is the face of probably the more vapid and addictive side of social media, because these people are literally trading in your attention directly for money, essentially.
Yeah.
And that, I can see, is problematic.
Yeah, there's definitely problems here. Yeah,
it's not all
sunshines and roses.
No, it's not. But once again, you know, there are more kinds of influencer than there are like types of regular job in the world.
Yeah, we're people.
Like, yeah, or yeah, as many kinds of influencer as there are regular jobs.
Definitely,
job. It's not all just trying to flog a product.
Yeah. I guess we're in a real time-changing, like, new era of work and of taking up space, and with that comes a lot of clapback. It's doing it again.
It's okay. I think we should just continue.
Keep going? Okay, yep. Cool. Oh, our mics. Yeah.
I think the thing is, we're still using GarageBand, and maybe we should just transfer to Logic now.
James?
I just feel like everything might go more smoothly.
Why don't you do it? Maybe it's gone, it would be.
Yeah. Look, I think to circle back to Hubs and to circle back to normalize the 9 to 5. Poor Hubs. I'm sure Hubs is a perfectly fine guy, and I'm sure Hubs is nice to go and grab a beer with and play a game of golf with, and et cetera.
You know, I can just tell that he'd be great to play a game.
Yeah, he wouldn't ask you too many personal questions. He
just hit the ball,
and then when you did a bad shot, he wouldn't say anything.
Interesting.
Which is the polite thing.
Is that
to
the
do.
Polite?
Okay. Totally. Yeah. The worst thing to do in a game of golf is if someone hits a bad shot, you go, "Oh, it's okay. It was pretty good."
What if you say you fucked that?
That's in Australian culture, that's perfect.
Is it?
I always remember that conversation we had in America with that taxi driver.
We're going off topic here, but I'll allow it.
And he was like, "Oh, you know, this Australian surfer, I couldn't remember her name." He was like, "Oh, she's so rude. She's so mean to everyone. She's always smack talking everyone." I'm like, that's what we do.
That's Australian conversation.
If you don't smack talk in sport, you're not making it past like under fives.
Also, it's rude not to smack talk.
That's right. It's like this weird translation thing where smack talking becomes polite.
Mm.
It's like you are showing someone that you love them by smack talking them.
I completely agree.
So yeah, Habs would probably be
one of them. But yeah, he would never say anything actually rude.
No, probably not.
Yeah, I don't know. I had so much rage, but I guess the rage is just like a lot of emotion because I still feel, I guess there was just triggered that little bit of shame that I've had for so long for not just doing a normal job. And I felt like, I was like, why is this guy like pushing all those buttons again? Like, I thought I was over this.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is hard. It's hard because, you know, what we do is only 10 years old, really.
Mm.
And I think to already against it and being like, well, this 10-year-old grassroots movement essentially that's like in its infancy and that is still, there's no roadmap for, and is essentially the juggernaut, and that 9 to 5 work is the David and the Goliath situation, you know?
Yep.
I'm so sorry. Are all these multi-million, multi-billion dollar corporations the underdogs here?
Yeah, it's really interesting.
The person with the steady paycheck is the one who's vilified over the person with, you know, unknown and wildly varying income, like us, who I have literally no idea what our tax return will be this year. And I'm and of course, me, the big evil person who has no idea what their tax return is going to be this year, is hating everyone on Instagram and,
you should quit your job, that's all we say.
The funny thing is, it's kind of a call like hustle culture, which we agree with.
I know, and I can see why what he's saying is attractive. He's just saying, stop, you don't have to push for further, like your life can be content in these small moments, and like small moments matter and teens matter, and like, I get it, Hubs, but unfortunately you really triggered me to the point where I made a podcast about it.
Yeah, and he'll never hear this or care.
He might. I seriously doubt it too.
Yeah, because, I mean, at the core of his message as well, the idea that you shouldn't give your whole life to your work is something I 100% agree with.
And 100%.
I don't think artists should give their whole life to their
work
either.
No, I agree.
I think you should have a lot of other things going on in your life.
Yeah, I think that's a problem what I'm having right now is the moment. Everything I do for work is so fun. I'm so obsessed with it, but I need extra hobbies at the moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have anything you want to talk about just personally? How are you going?
I'm going pretty well. I have not really managed to do my second writing session since I got back from Australia.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been hard for me to ease back into it. I'm in a really tricky part of my novel, part of the crime novel where you have to just like have your detective tell everyone
the
what happened. And it's really boring and hard to make it interesting.
Yeah.
If it's the right solution. So it's been hard, and it's been hard to face it. I've been managing to do my morning session, but the afternoon session I've only probably managed twice, which is fine. I think I just got to build my way back up into it. I was journaling yesterday, and in my journal, I talked about how, you know, because I've been exercising for so long, when I really want to ramp it up and get better at something, I can just flick the switch.
Yeah.
And I can go from like, just for whatever. And then when I'm really motivated to get really good at something, I just go, bam. And then suddenly I can train like 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. My body can just handle it.
Yeah.
It's conditioned, knows how to do all the exercises with good form. I have muscle memory. It's just instantaneous. I just go into that mode. And I think with writing, that's what I'm doing. I'm building up this base.
Yeah, so that you can have do more.
When I have to, if I ever have to flick the switch.
I really like that perspective.
And I can do it easily, and I can do it without burning out. And I can hopefully do it, you know, so that something that would have been really difficult for me when I first started will be really easy.
Yeah, kind of like, hate to bring it back to myself, but kind of like what I did for We Need Your Art.
Totally.
we had a very small timeline in which to get this first draft to the editor. And I was like, babes, I've been training for this my whole life.
Mm.
This is what I've been training for. And I was able to do it so quickly.
You did like 10 years of prep for marathon. And
yeah,
then
just smashed it out.
Just smashed it out in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And I think there's a place for that, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it was a circumstance in which, like, I was ready. I would never want to work like that constantly. That's not the point of this.
No.
But yeah, I filled up my stamina and my experience so that I could.
And anyway, historically, we've been more about the sort of seasonal work schedules as well, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Harvest and sowing, and then you rest in the winter. And,
yeah.
It's sort of like intense bouts of work, and then you get long rests. And I think that's a nice way to live.
Yeah, I think you work really well to that kind of
seasonal
thing.
I do, because inevitably every year I'll want to take like a month or two.
Yeah.
Really low, like really low work off, basically.
Yeah.
And it's nice that I can.
Well, I love it.
And it's nice that I have this space now that when I need. Then when I'm motivated, I can write 1,000 words a day or even more.
Yeah, beautiful. From a trip, it's always really hard to re-enter, and we have to have a lot of compassion for ourselves, not just in the first day, but in like the first like month, honestly. It's so hard to reorient when you're on your own schedule, especially when like no one's telling you what to do. Like you have to slide back in so gently because fuck, it can be tough.
Yeah, and you don't know which neural pathways you're going to come back to, right? It's like, am I going to come back to the neural pathway, which is that I just sit around depressed?
Yeah.
Or am I going to come back to the neural pathway that is that I am extremely motivated? Or, you know, it's almost like I've developed these modes.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I've been really like watching myself as we come back. So I think we're on like day 10 of being back from Australia. And I've been really noticing that my excitement and stress response has been provoking the exact same shit in my body recently. So like I've been bouncing between excited to being very stressed, and it feels very similar. And learning how to calm down when I'm super excited has been something that I've been thinking about a lot, because like there's so much going on right now, and I've been so excited, but the excitement like stress, and then all of a sudden I'm like, am I excited or am I stressed? And it's very odd. And then I'm like, whatever I am, I'm super overstimulated and I need to calm down. So just trying to learn to calm my central nervous system when there's lots going on, because I think that that's a big part of the reason why I have so many energy problems, is I'm always in like a very heightened state.
Yeah.
Whether I'm excited or stressed or whatever, I'm just like, I'm up here.
Yeah, it's been nice. You've been really trying to stop work at 5.
Yes.
And I like that.
Yeah, so I've been trying. Normally I would make my content post 5 o'clock, like probably like 7 or 8 even. So I'm now trying to make my content. I have to have a hard stop at 5.
You'd have like a break from 5 to 8 and then you go back in and make your content. And I think it was just,
it's too much stimulation.
Amped up and it was
too much stimulation.
Although then paradoxically you had 2 really bad sleeps in a row.
I did. I know, it's so annoying. Like managing a body is such hard work.
So hard. I actually had one more idea to go back to the hubs.
Oh, please.
And I thought it would be nice for you to give some advice to people, because I know people wonder this a lot about how to know whether they should quit their job or not, or when is a good time to quit your job, or should you have a certain amount of income, or should you...
Yeah.
Those sort of things.
This has everything to do with your risk tolerance and like your own personal situations. I think the first big question is, do you want to quit your job? Because like this is some... There is no right answer here. And like I will support you so hard whatever it is you choose. Like a lot of people enjoy having the stability of like even maybe a part-time job, so that not all of the financial pressure goes on to your art, and you've got to figure out which one of them you are. I want to have the financial pressure, and that might, like, I was really excited for my art to support me, and I wanted to make it happen, and I knew it was the only way I wanted it to happen. Like I wanted art to consume all corners of my life, and so for me going full-time was, I knew it was what I wanted. I knew it for so long. And I was told again and again and again, no, you shouldn't ski. You'll ruin your art practice. There will be too much pressure on your art practice. So few people can do it. Books don't make any money. Like those that were just like, don't do it, don't do it, don't. I knew that's what I wanted. So if you've got to sit and think about like all the different things that are going on for you, whether it is something. But if you do, I love you. I see you. And it is possible.
I think for some people who do find that narrative really appealing of, I can never monetize my hobby because it'll ruin it for me, because the pressure will ruin it for me. It's like, maybe you are the sort of person who should never quit your job. Maybe you're the sort of person who, even when you're incredibly successful in your art, you'll still want to keep a job. And you kind of like might have fuck you money for the job, so you don't have to take it too seriously.
Yeah.
But then the pressure's never on. And that's what we were talking about. If you listen to our podcast about getting the book deal, it's like getting the book deal with Penguin, we still want to be making our own income, because I don't want the pressure to be on that one book
thing.
Deal.
It's especially because I don't like the idea of like I don't want all of our finances to come from external sources. Yeah. So like a publishing house, and again for us to be safe financially. Like, I want to make sure I'm in charge and I'm in control of my finances.
Yeah, and having a safe job might be your version of that.
Yeah, definitely.
And or a part-time job or something that's going to at least cover the rent and cover the, you know, your basic grocery bills.
This is,
or...
again, though, all to do with your risk tolerance. Yeah. I'm sure there are, like, great risk tolerance quizzes online if you're not entirely sure where you're sitting with risk.
I mean, I think the sick one for someone who's just, like, middle is you just wait till your hobby is earning as much as your old job was.
Yeah.
And then you can quit. And it's like...
But if you're someone who needs the push, so for example, if you're someone who you're never going to push hard the safety net of something else, like maybe you do want to give yourself, like, you're making just enough money to survive, but it's not going to be very comfortable. So you quit your main job so that you've got that kind of hunger to keep growing in your creative business. Like, maybe that's what you need. But or maybe you do just want to match your salary and then you can quit.
And I also want to just note that a lot of people find that when they quit their job, their output goes down. So I think it's worth almost doing a test to see what your creative output is going to be like when you have full days. So it's like maybe you have 4 weeks of paid time off.
Yeah, take a sabbatical.
Take a sabbatical and don't go on holidays. Just see what it's like for you to write full time. You might hate it.
Yeah.
You might absolutely hate it. And I know this, that's a short amount of time to not know after 4 weeks. It might take you a year to get
to the rhythm. It'll give you a good idea.
Yeah.
This happened in COVID. Everyone who said they wanted to do their art full time had the pandemic and a lot of people lost their jobs and they had this time to create. And I obviously, it's extenuating, so it'll be a traumatic time, but I know a lot of people who get the time off and they do not create well, because a lot of us need time constrictions and we need busyness in order for us to actually be productive creatively, because we need to be able to fit it in between things rather than having these huge long stretches of days where we have to make so many decisions about what we get done, when we get done. It can be a lot of pressure. Again, something really to consider about how you work. And that doesn't mean you can adapt to it. Like, I really struggle with whole full days. I still do. I still find it really hard. But I'm learning, and I know I want my whole days to be filled with art.
But we would never put the pressure on a whole day to be only art, would we? Like, no. You always have a bunch of other things, like a framework to support that. So
yeah, it's interesting.
I think it would be an absolute disaster for me to say all I'm doing today is writing.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
And, well, I know from my capacity that I can really only do 2 hours of writing in a day.
Yeah.
So...
Like, I was trying to write 9 to 5 when I quit my job.
Horrible.
It was a fucking joke. I hated myself because I thought I was incapable. Again, that's my corporate hangover.
What do you think your average writing day was? Like, how many words do you think you got done?
When I was...
doing that.
20 minutes, 30 minutes. I was so depressed.
So you got less done trying to do it all day than you now get by just giving yourself one small block in the morning.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I think it's like, okay, if you hate your job for other reasons and you want to find a way out, then that's a different question. But if it's like you think it's just artist to quit your job and only do art, that is not your duty as an artist.
No, it's not.
But Amy hated every job she ever had.
I think that is really important. Like, it was it was urgent. Mm. And I think that's why I had so many, like, be patient. Like, you know, it takes ages to, you know, build a career as an artist. I was like, I can't be patient anymore. These jobs are hurting my soul. I am so creatively driven. I have so many ambitions for my art. And I'm going to this cafe job making shitty flat whites for people I hate. Then I'm going to this 9 to 5 doing financial advice work for insane people. Like, I was so miserable. I was like, my art has to save me.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's just like very smoky outside all of a sudden.
Interesting.
Okay.
We'll finish soon and we can check.
Okay, great.
I can't smell any fire in the house.
Okay, great.
If you don't hear from us, actually, how will we have posted the episode if we die in a fire? Yes, I think it was incredibly important for you to find a way to at least be your own boss, whatever that looked like.
Because, yeah, I mean, that was very
important. You're just one of those people. And I think that's a point that we didn't touch on earlier in the podcast, which is some people are being entrepreneurs and some people are not. And it's no shame if you're one way or the other. You know, the variance in human personalities is almost infinite. So it's like, if you are someone who just hates having a boss, which is what Amy was like, you hate being told what to do, then maybe it's a great idea for you to really try and be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who loves a team, loves, you know, doesn't really love to take initiative, would rather just be told what to do, once again, nothing wrong with that.
No.
You can you can have a job.
Yeah.
Or...
And to know this about yourself.
Yes.
I think a lot of this comes back to knowing how you like to work. I've been thinking a lot recently about how we're told how to work. We're not taught how to work, like how like we like to work. Mm. It's a big problem when people go full time. They don't know how they actually like to produce because we've just been told to do it in a certain way. I think it's really important to figure out what we like about work, what we don't like about work, like how we like to work, what rhythms we like to work in, because I think that's something that we've just not we're not attached to, and we don't know. And it's something I think you should think about as a creative. It's like, how do I like to produce things, both as a creative and as non-creative?
I think that our most popular episode of all time is now creating around your job from like mid-2022.
It'd be worth doing that again, I think.
Well, I think if
the first problem is we get further and further away from having to create around a job,
because we know less about it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just think it's worth people just going back and listening to that episode if you're still interested.
Yes.
I know many of you won't have listened to that episode.
Yeah.
Even though it is our most popular episode.
Yeah, interesting.
Still, a lot of you won't listen to it. So yeah. It's that one, and there was Running a Creative Business. There are two most popular episodes.
I could talk about running a creative business all day, all night.
Which is actually really pleasing to me, because it means our interview episodes. So like the next four or five are interview episodes, but it means that our solo episodes do overall, like the good ones or the ones that are catchy titled, do end up getting more traction than like some moderately famous person is on the podcast.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Sometimes they're
Sometimes they are. And literally it's like there's just a list of interviews. That's and then so there's funny. The other follow ones. Yeah.
Well, people love us. We're so cute. Changed.
Yeah. Focus an interview. Like, we're not going to go rambling for as long. So maybe depends what you like in us, right?
It really does. We like, I mean, the amount of people who just say we love listening to you too, it feels like we're just in a conversation around a cup of tea. And that's how we feel, like, that we just get to have a cup of tea totally. With you all and just chill.
It's like did we talk about this last week? How we were thinking about producing, I think we were talking about this last week. Like, we have this really cool company that we really like, and they're near us. And they're like, if you can, we have a full production suite package that you can pay for. Like, edit our videos, they'll do clips, like, they'll strategize for, and we were like, it sounds great, but I just don't think that people want that from us.
People, we don't certainly really... haven't been doing that in the past, and we have an audience. And so,
and the reason we contacted them in the first place is because we wanted to get a mate of the podcast, and you can just go into this, which is really cool. But then they had this other package which we looked into, and then I think, you know, I've already gone on rants about how I don't want to overproduce the podcast before, so it would be kind of betraying my old rants as well.
It would be betraying your old rants. I don't want to overproduce this podcast. What I do want is, I want good video footage, and I want content again, because I want, me and James were talking yesterday, and we've been doing a lot of like, what are we going doing, where are we going kind of conversations, and I really want this podcast to be at a center of what, because it's like, how do we do that? I mean, we have abandoned ship on this podcast Instagram page.
Yeah, I think that, but that's just too much work, right? To
it's
make
too
the
much
reels
work,
like,
yeah,
I think getting the podcast out, and I was saying, if we could just get the podcast out every week, that would be so much more valuable than making a few reels. Because, and Tim Ferriss talks about this, like, he'll have a clip of his podcast go absolutely viral, like millions of views, and they don't see a single uptick in listeners going over to
that's
the podcast.
Banana.
So it's like, if you're actually trying to foster long-term listeners, I don't think the Instagram is really where.
Well, then
how
does podcasters foster long-time listeners?
Word of mouth.
All right. Yes.
I think we rely
tell your friends.
We rely on people, you listeners, telling other people. Like, if you think about it, if every one of you, I'm not saying this is just a math thing, if every one of you told a friend or got a friend to listen to the podcast, then we would double instantly our listener base.
That's true.
So true. I mean, it seems so stupid to say it, but like, that's just what we should be trying to do, essentially. Yeah. Is making our podcast so fucking fun, and that hopefully you know some friend who doesn't mind a rambly cozy podcast.
That's a lovely name.
Like
for
an
it.
ASMR podcast,
a little cozy creative podcast.
Sometimes I shout phrases about slapping asses though,
or golf. But
what? I think, you know, most of you are women between the ages of 25 and 40. And maybe you look at the world, what the fuck are those stupid idiots doing over there? And I'm just trying to demystify it for you, because have fun.
You haven't sold it in any way. And it is exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
But somehow you love it.
Yeah. There's a part in the Winnie Drought book where Amy ribs me for my golf ability.
Do I?
Yeah.
I have no memory of writing anything in that book.
Yeah, because we're talking about how this is... Should we just end it?
No, tell me.
We're about how, you know, you have skills that are really amenable to just the 10,000 hour rule of practice, and golf is one of them, and how you can just put in time and just put in time and get better and better and better. And then I think in brackets, it's like, and yeah, my husband still sucks at it.
Yeah, nice.
Which I think I might have written in myself.
I think you wrote that yourself.
As I was saying earlier, it's all about ribbing. It's all about the... subtle burn.
So the subtle burn is the Australian culture. All right, guys, thank you for being with us on quite a rambly podcast. Apologies to Hubs. I disagree with you, but I respect you for making art online.
Totally.
And we're very grateful to you, artist, creative. Thanks. We will see you next week. We're going to do this consistently, I promise.
I promise.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.